want to make sure that the U.S. maintains its edge in global AI development. And one of the problems is that China is at the same time they're developing AI technologies, they are seeking to control the content that is put out there on AI. And so we have to continue to prioritize those policies and be the standard bearer for free and open AI development. One of the problems was when it came to chips, we were having to import chips, and so many components were Chinese made. China was getting chips from NVIDIA or whoever else. They were still, even though they were on that third tier, they were getting the chips. We need to have oversight to make sure that taxpayer dollars are not being used for political censorship or to push any particular agenda. So content moderation, as you know, can be easily manipulated.
Welcome to the Regulating AI podcast. Join host Sanjay Puri as he explores the dynamic and developing world of artificial intelligence governance. Each episode features deep dives with global leaders at the forefront of regulating AI responsibly, tackling the challenges using AI can bring about head-on and enabling balance without hindering innovation.
Welcome to the Regulating AI podcast, where we explore the intersection of artificial intelligence, policy, and society. I'm your host, Sanjay Puri, and today we are honored to have Congressman Ben Klein from Virginia's 6th Congressional District with us. Congressman Klein was appointed to the bipartisan House Task Force on Artificial Intelligence and has been actively engaged in AI policy discussions, including introducing legislation addressing AI-powered content moderation. As a member of the House Judiciary Committee, he brings a unique perspective on AI governance. Welcome to the show, Congressman Klein.
Thank you for having me. Good to be with you.
Great. Congressman, we have a global audience. The audience is policymakers, members of Congress, think tanks, AI entrepreneurs globally. And for some of the folks who are maybe not as informed about our political system, I might just ask you some questions to explain. But let's just talk a little bit about when you were appointed to the AI task force. You mentioned intentional stewardship of AI. Can you elaborate for our audience, because it might not be very clear to them what that means to you?
Well, intentional stewardship means that as AI develops, that we minimize government intervention, maximize protection of constitutional freedoms, encouraging innovation in the private sector. We do need to strike a balance, but it needs to promote AI while protecting against threats like censorship and bias.
Well, that's a very important point that you made, and I'm going to just take it a little further. Vice President J.D. Vance had gone to Paris a few months ago for one of our big AI conferences. And there he emphasized that American values must underpin global AI development, which is kind of, I think, the point that you're kind of making. Do you think Congress has a role in reinforcing that vision?
Well, absolutely. As Congress continues to address IP and other types of judicial issues, making sure that they impact AI in a way that encourages development and doesn't hinder development, making sure that our Constitution, with its protections for speech and for religious expression and for addressing grievances by petitioning your government, those are all protected as we encourage the development of AI. So I think what the Vice President said was correct. I think that we all stand united. It is not a partisan issue when it comes to encouraging AI development. There has to be that balance where we respect the freedoms and liberties of the people who are using it, and that includes people outside the United States as well.
So from that, just to follow up on that perspective, Congressman, as you know, we've had now a change in administration, and with the new administration coming in, they've scrapped President Biden's executive order on AI. In your view, are there, you know, right now we don't have anything out there. Do you think there are some regulatory priorities that need to be enacted? And what do you think should replace the former framework that President Biden had with his executive order?
Well, I do think that it's important for each administration to be able to define for itself what its policy goals are and not to have to depend on what the last administration put forward. So I think it's responsible for the Trump administration to chart its own course. Now, J.D. Vance articulated well the balance that has to be achieved, but also the effort that has to take place in the United States to minimize government intervention. And I don't think that the Biden administration policy did that. I don't think it was aggressive enough in making sure that we protected the private sector's ability to innovate, as well as individuals to express their views. And to protect against the need to protect against content moderation by government. And so I think for those reasons, the President Trump did the right thing.
So, you know, Congressman, AI has become a big geopolitical issue, and we'll, you know, delve a little bit into that. But let's, you know, kick off that topic by, you know, DeepSeek, which there was a company in China which released a very powerful open source AI model, and which really has raised questions about geopolitical competition between U.S. and China. In your view, you know, how do you see this play out, especially as far as AI is concerned? It seems like the Chinese might not be as far behind as we thought they were, and maybe they have been able to produce models at maybe a lower cost than us. And then obviously I want to talk a little bit about our, you know, chip policy as far as China and other countries, but just broadly, what are your views in terms of the geopolitical implications of AI and especially China?
Well, China still remains a threat, and even more so since their AI model came out. We want to make sure that the U.S. maintains its edge in global AI development. And one of the problems is that China is at the same time they're developing AI technologies, they are seeking to control the content that is put out there on AI. And so we have to continue to prioritize those policies and be the standard bearer for free and open AI development, making sure that as the private sector does develop, that the competition with China is fair, that there isn't an appropriation of AI technology by China or anybody else as they seek to create their own models. They're not unfairly adopting or stealing AI technology from other countries or other companies. We have to make sure our national security is protected. AI is going to be impacting national security issues. It's going to be impacting economic issues. And so making sure we lead in the AI space for those reasons and for others is going to continue to be a priority for us.
So to lead in the AI space, Congressman, as you know, we have now rules. I mean, within AI, the chips that drive this, the GPUs, are a key component of it. They're produced primarily by a company called NVIDIA, and there are now restrictions on how these chips, to which countries we would have them be exported. The Biden administration had basically three categories. You know, our closest allies, then there were the second range of countries where there were some restrictions, and obviously the third range of countries, which whether it was China or other countries, which would probably never get those chips. It was called the AI diffusion rule. And you know, in the second category, there were countries like Israel, India, who were, so to speak, our allies, and they had raised issues. And that rule has now been rolled back by the Trump administration. From your perspective, Congressman, do you see us restricting, whether it's chips or some of these technologies, to countries? Is that something that Congress should play a role in there? And is that something that would continue to keep our edge in terms of AI?
Well, it's part of a larger issue, which is global trade between the U.S. and the rest of the world. And this president has, he has taken action to essentially reset our trading platform, or the lay of the land, so to speak, with other countries. And so one of the problems was, when it came to chips, we were having to import chips, and so many components were Chinese made. China was getting chips from NVIDIA or whoever else. They were still, even though they were on that third tier, they were getting the chips. And so we needed a reset, and I'm glad the Trump administration has taken aggressive action. Now, when it comes to tariffs, I think that they can be a good tool to use when renegotiating these trade agreements. And so, as provided they are short term and used temporarily to gain advantage in these negotiations, I think that's a responsible use of tariff authority. Now, do I think, as President Trump does, that tariff is the most beautiful word in the English language? No, I do not. But I think that as we move forward, bringing more manufacturing back to the United States is a good goal. Bringing more chip manufacturing back to the United States is a good goal. And getting our relationship with Taiwan and other countries in order so that we can be a leader on chip manufacturing and not be reliant on China or any other country for chips is going to be critical.
So tariffs, not the most beautiful word, as you said, in the English language. But I think you make a point that we need to bring the supply chain back to the United States because it's a critical asset. The other critical asset, Congressman, that's part of this AI revolution is basically energy. How critical, because AI foundation models consume enormous energy, how critical is energy infrastructure in supporting the expansion of AI foundation models? And what policies would you and Congress advocate for that?
Well, that's the biggest question, isn't it? I mean, we all recognize that AI requires enormous amounts of electricity, and data centers are going to be an increasingly important part of that. We, in the Commonwealth of Virginia, where I represent one of the districts, is the leader. We have the most, the largest number of data centers of any state, and we seek to continue that leadership role. And so that energy supply is going to be even more critical. My governor, Glenn Youngkin, is seeking to diversify our energy portfolio to bring on more small modular nuclear and other forms of energy to power these data centers to be able to continue to lead in AI and provide that, not just the amount of energy, but that consistency of energy that is needed. Now, we saw over in Europe the blackouts in Spain. We saw that when you shift to predominantly green energy, majority solar and others, you're going to have these intermittent problems. You're not going to be able to have the load be as reliable. as it needs to be. And so I think Europe's going to have to rethink this transition to green energy. And I think America is going to be smart to seek to diversify its energy sources, to continue to advocate for fossil fuels, whether it be cleaner natural gas or coal. Clean coal technology is making rapid advancements, but also nuclear, renewing our commitment to nuclear and being a leader globally as we once were.
Mm-hmm. So as you rightly said, it's going to take a whole portfolio of different sources of energy to make this happen, whether it's nuclear, clean coal, modular. Governor Youngkin has talked about modular nuclear. One of the things that comes up, I have had a lot of your colleagues that come in on the show, and they talk about permitting reform for energy. What is happening on that? Is something going to happen? Because it seems like there is a consensus on this issue in Capitol Hill. Can you tell our listeners if there's something that's going to happen that will move this thing forward, Congressman?
I would like to say that this is one of the easier solutions that can be problems that can be solved here on Capitol Hill, but it's proving to be a sticky one for some reason. And I think there's general agreement on my side of the aisle that permitting reform to speed the adoption of construction of more power facilities and more pipelines and other ways to deliver that energy are going to be key. We need to have involvement from the other side of the aisle. They have recognized the need for permitting reform, but I don't think they want to release control over the type of energy that's traveling, and that's problematic. They remain committed in many corners of the other side to the Green New Deal, and that is a fool's errand to think that you can replace fossil fuels with solar and wind. And it's just not possible, and we're seeing the effects of that in Europe. And so I think permitting reform will continue to be an issue, and we have a few Democrats who are on board with getting this across the finish line, and hopefully we can increase that to 10. If we can get 10 senators from the other side to join us, then we can overcome any filibuster they put up and move the bill forward.
Great. Well, we'll be watching that carefully, because I think that's a critical piece, because from all indications, sometimes it takes 15 years to put up a nuclear plant, and that just we will be way past the AI revolution in 15 years. So we are hoping for things to move faster here. Congressman, let's talk a little bit about something that you have expressed concern about, which is AI powered content moderation. Tell our listeners what specific concerns do you have, and you also introduced the End UN Censorship Act regarding the iVerify tool.
Absolutely. We need to have oversight to make sure that taxpayer dollars are not being used for political censorship or to push any particular agenda. So content moderation, as you know, can be easily manipulated to stifle free speech or censor legitimate opinion. So we have to uphold the First Amendment. We have to make sure that any funding that government puts forward for AI has to be subject to careful scrutiny to prevent these types of abuses. We also need a transparent policy, a transparent process for reviewing government contracts related to AI, regular audits of AI systems that the taxpayers should, that if funded by the taxpayers should be transparent and available to all, so that we can see exactly what's happening behind the screen and make sure that their functioning is promised and serving the public interests, and making sure that the investments that the taxpayers make have measured outcomes and clear performance metrics to ensure that they're achieving the desired results. Now, the legislation that I've introduced has to do with iVerify and the United Nations, which uses U.S. contributions. We are the largest contributor to the UN, but to develop and implement an AI-assisted fact-checking tool to label speech. When the UN labels speech as misinformation or disinformation, malinformation or toxic or hate speech, often that speech is protected by our First Amendment. So the bill that, in 2021, we gave the UN Development Program $190 million, and they're testing this, I verify, in five countries: Kenya, Honduras, Liberia, Sierra Leone, and Zambia. What we found is that hostile governments can model it for their own illicit intent because it's listed on the Digital Public Good Registry. We need to stop it. So my legislation would prohibit taxpayer funds from aiding iVerify in any capacity.
So, Congressman, for our listeners, what you're saying is this iVerify program, you know, if it is misused or it is abused, can provide a mechanism of disinformation, just for clarity of our listeners?
Yes, absolutely. It would be under the guise of prohibiting disinformation, actually end up promoting disinformation and misinformation or whatever political agenda the UN or other countries were seeking to promote.
Yeah, so that's an important issue, because these days, as you know, democracies and all kinds of institutions are under attack, and AI is being used as a tool in elections and others. So that's something for us to be watching. Congressman, something now closer to home. You are from the beautiful state of Virginia, and so am I. But your district is also a rural district to a certain extent. It's great to talk about AI for all these great things, technology and things like that. How, for your constituents, how is AI going to make an impact, and how can you make sure that rural areas don't get left behind in this transformative technology?
AI can absolutely have a transformative impact in rural areas. My district is a combination of rural counties where farmers will be able to use AI and optimizing crop yields, managing resources, reducing waste, boosting productivity while conserving water and other critical resources. So that's fantastic. And yet I have such a large number of small colleges and universities in my district that I'm either one of the top or the top congressmen in terms of higher education. So balancing that also in the cities with James Madison University, Shenandoah University, Roanoke College, Washington and Lee University, Virginia Military Institute, you name it. These colleges are also going to be centers of innovation when it comes to AI, and making sure that rural colleges and universities have access as well is going to be critical.
So can play a big role in rural areas, whether it is in the work they do, in the education and the opportunities, which is great. I think, Congressman, we don't want what happened with the digital divide to be the case for an AI divide. Congressman, you also served in the Virginia House of Delegates. So you have pretty good idea of states. There is the issue of federal, state. What roles do you think that states might have in AI regulations, or should they have?
They should. And, Governor Youngkin took the lead in ensuring that DeepSeek was not used on state facilities and by state entities, where the security of our systems and our networks in the Commonwealth is important. And we want to make sure that they're protected from and any type of intervention. So that was a good policy to adopt. But then the states can protect their citizens by addressing privacy concerns, safeguarding against foreign threats, and tailoring to local needs. I mean, when you have a state as diverse as Commonwealth of Virginia. We have Northern Virginia with our tech industry. We have rural Virginia with the ag industry. And we have the Virginia Beach area, the Norfolk area, where we have shipbuilding. We have a large naval base, and we are very interested in protecting national security as well. So between those three areas, Virginia's poised to be a leader in development of AI and making sure that we serve as a model to other states who are coming up and wanting to use AI responsibly and not letting it run rampant over their systems.
So states do have a important role, because we have had governors also come in on our show, and you're saying it's from an economic development, from a national security, from an education standpoint, they do play a key role. The other thing that you have been very passionate and an outspoken advocate has been on consumer privacy. How do you see AI impacting this domain, and what measures do you think are necessary to protect individual rights and their data? Especially, you sit on the Judiciary Committee in Congress, Congressman.
We want to make sure that AI is used by our judicial system, but as it's used, it supports rather than replaces human judgment and upholds constitutional rights. So we want to make sure, for example, drafting legal documents, filings and briefs, you know, it can help streamline the process, but it's not meant to replace the process of lawyers. As a lawyer, we can't have AI can be a helpful tool, but it doesn't need to be replacing lawyers and the thought processes that go into legal work. And another concern would be the use of AI in surveillance and facial recognition technology, because while they can be used, they do pose a risk of infringing on civil liberties and privacy rights if not regulated properly. The private sector is best positioned to understand the technical complexities and rapidly developing nature of the field. So self-regulation can allow for flexibility and speed, enabling companies to establish best practices and internal controls that address issues. But at the same time, when it comes to government use, we need to make sure, and especially in judiciary, that it's a tool that assists rather than replaces.
A tool that assists rather than replaces, which is, I think, an important point. Congressman, you, like a lot of members of Congress, sit on several committees, whether it's in judiciary, appropriations, etc. From a coordination standpoint in the U.S. Congress or in the Senate, etc., do you think with the task force and the bipartisan committee, etc., Congress is suited to now look at AI governance across different domains, and the level of expertise within you obviously have a deep interest and an awareness of this. Is that something, and this is a question whether our general public should reach out to members of Congress, is the Congress set up for doing AI governance, because AI is moving so fast? And obviously, on the same day you talk about AI, you're talking about tariffs, you're talking about Gaza, you're talking about Ukraine, border security, etc. So it's really not fair. I mean, what is your state of the situation in Congress to address some of these things?
Well, one of the things about Congress and our founders back at the beginning of this country saw the benefit of bringing members together who came from different backgrounds, who had different specialties, who could speak to different issues in more detail, and that put that experience to work for the American people. Now, we have 435 members of the House. We come from all different walks of life with different education levels and different specialties. And so finding your place in this institution is important. As a lawyer, I got on the Judiciary Committee as someone with a knowledge of technology. I'm on the Intellectual Property Subcommittee. And as someone who is interested in civil liberties and protecting our constitutional rights, I'm on that committee as well. So that gives me a position where hopefully other members who may not be that focused on those issues will give me the opportunity to help educate, help inform, and to lead the development of policy in those areas where they need to go in a collaborative way. You don't respect your fellow members, then they'll seek solutions of their own. And that's why it's important to maintain that respect for your colleagues. The relationships that we have are important on both sides of the aisle. You can't just dismiss almost half of the House. We only have a 5-seat majority. And so you can't dismiss 49% of the representatives of the people. It's important to get to know them as well, because they come from backgrounds that may prove to be informative and helpful as you develop those policy solutions. Mm-hmm.
So working collaboratively, finding areas where they might have some expertise that you don't have and you have some and that they might not have, I think is what you're saying. So that's good to know. Finally, Congressman, tell our listeners your long-term vision of AI in the U.S. and what role do you see for yourself in shaping that future?
Well, I think that AI long-term my vision is one where the technology continues to drive innovation. It strengthens our economy and it improves the lives of the American people, but also ensures that it's developed and deployed responsibly, ethically, and in line with our core constitutional values. So it's a tool that can influence just about every sector, as we were talking about, from agriculture to the judicial systems that are adopted globally, to the economy, to our defense systems, our national security systems. So we have to make sure that regardless of which industry it's in, we establish clear, effective regulations that foster innovation, ensure transparency, and protect individual rights.
That's great. It's kind of like our tagline. We say innovate responsibly, and that's what you're kind of saying, which is very, very important. Congressman, finally, for our listeners who might not have the greatest attention span, we have a lightning round just for a few quick questions, for one-word answers from you. Are you ready?
Yes.
Okay. Biggest AI opportunity, according to you?
I would say innovation is the biggest AI opportunity.
Greatest AI threat?
China.
More important, is it AI safety or speed?
I would say speed at this point.
Okay. AI regulation, should it be federal or state?
I think it should be state.
Okay. AI impact on jobs, is it going to be positive or negative?
Both. New jobs will be created as old ones go away.
Okay. And finally, energy use in AI, is it urgent or manageable?
It's urgent. It is so urgent.
Agree with you. Congressman, thank you so much for joining us. Your insights on AI governance, especially content moderation, and, you know, balancing innovation and regulation, really provide a valuable perspective for our listeners. And to our listeners, thank you for tuning in to Regulating AI. Don't forget to subscribe to more conversations with leading voices in AI policies and governance. I think Congressman has provided a unique perspective, you know, from a rural standpoint, from national security, from the new administration's perspective, from a constitutional perspective. So thank you to you, from our listeners, Congressman. Thank you so much.
Sanjay, glad to be with you. Thank you.
Thank you.